The importance of the pre-flood world. Pre-flood world is very important. Gives us a lot of details in the book of Genesis that we may not normally be able to get. We're going to be looking today at pre-Adamic man. And the truth about pre-Adamic man and early man, it indicates a true origin of mankind. We read in the Bible that Mother Eve was the mother of all living. Was the mother of all living. It shows that man was created and did not evolve. The truly correctly interpreted record of early man shows this. It reveals that we were created in the image of God, marrying this with the scriptures, and it validates the Genesis account. So today when we have this Bible study, what I'm going to try to show you is that the fossil record actually supports the book of Genesis, and it does not support evolution. And that might come to a surprise to you. The problem, my friends, is not the fossils. The problem is the interpretation that is placed on the fossils. A couple of things about review. We are old earth creationists. We covered that in a previous Bible study. Mankind is young, 6, 7, 8,000 years old, probably around 6. We look at the genealogies. And the earth is old. How old, we don't know. But it could be very, very old, depending on your faith in the dating methods that mankind uses. Many of them are evolutionarily based. We know that Genesis 1 is a recreation account. The world, there was a world before Adam. It was destroyed. We have the earth being covered by water. And then we have in 7 days the earth being recreated. So that's what we read in Genesis chapter 1 from verse 2 on. There's a gap in Genesis chapter 1 verse 2. The earth became wasted and confused. So there's a gap there. We covered that extensively in the first Bible study we had. The Bible is a catastrophic book. We read about the catastrophes, the pre-Adamic catastrophe that led to the earth being covered by water. And then we read about the, and we're going to have a whole Bible study later, on the Noachian flood, which was another catastrophe. So there are many catastrophes mentioned in the Bible, many catastrophic catastrophes. Book of Revelation talks about comets and asteroids hitting the earth. So the Bible is a catastrophic book. Fossils and large strata beds are indications of past water catastrophes. Fossils can only be formed by water covering the fossils with sediment and then being buried quickly and then pressurized. If you leave an animal on top of the surface of the earth, there are no fossils made. Millions and millions of buffalo were killed by white men, Indians, buffalo hunters, and there are no fossilized buffaloes on the plains of the United States because they were not covered over by water. They were left out in the open and they decayed. Strata can be laid down very quickly and it can be eroded very quickly. These are some of the things we learned last time and we're going to continue. The earth has been through many past catastrophes. Pre-Adamic flood. We open up the Bible. Verse 3, the earth is covered by water. And in Genesis chapter 6, we have the earth being covered by the flood of Noah, which destroyed the earth. The pre-Adamic world of dinosaurs came to an end with a catastrophe that left the earth covered by water. We covered that in the last Bible study. Scientists, like all people, are biased. And in this Bible study, you're going to see very much so the bias of scientists. And by scientists, I don't mean the man that, you know, grinds the lenses for your glasses or the engineer that designs the building that we're in. I'm talking about evolutionary scientists and anthropologists, those that say that man has evolved. They are very, very biased, as are all people, because they are people like the rest of us. You and I have our biases. We admit that we have biases. Most of these evolutionary scientists say they are not biased. And to say you're not biased is the most biased position of all. Major points about pre-Adamic man and early man. The fossils of early man must be interpreted and dated. When you dig up a fossil, when these scientists dig up a fossil, it doesn't come with a date and a label on it. They got to put that on there. Somebody says this fossil is so many thousands or millions of years old, and this is a fossil of whatever it is. So that's interpreted. That doesn't come labeled. And even among scientists, there's great disagreement about where a fossil should be placed, what its age is, and what exactly is it a fossil of. Anthropologists try to make the fossils fit the evolutionary record. There are extinct apes. There are human beings. There is no bridge between them because evolution doesn't work. So what the scientists do in all good faith with a clean conscience is they take the apish fossils and give them human qualities, and they take the human qualities and give them apish qualities so that the gap between them is not as wide as it is. And that is interpreted in there. So evolutionists, anthropologists, try to make the fossils fit the evolutionary record. The fossils of early man support the creation account in Genesis. That's what I'm going to show you today. And this Bible study is going to have some speculation in it because we're not exactly sure what happened. Now, when some person comes on the television set and says, "We believe that this and this happened," people go, "Yeah, that's a possibility," because people want to keep an open mind. So there is going to be some speculation in this Bible study, but it is going to be biblically based. Now, let's look at the main categories of fossil men. And these are the scientific categories. These are not the church's categories or my categories. We're going to look at what the scientists say about the fossil men. This is Australopithecus afarensis, which is a remaking or a reconstruction of the Lucy skeleton found in the Afar region of Africa back in the 70s by Donald Johannesson. And this is one of the main categories. There's Australopithecus. Australo means southern. Pithecus means ape. So Australopithecus, very fancy sounding word, means ape from the south. That's what it means. It was found in the southern part of the world down in Africa. Our next category is Homo erectus. Homo erectus is, according to evolutionists, the first man that walked upright. Erectus. Homo means man. Erectus means upright. So Homo erectus means upright walking man. Then we have Neanderthal man. He's usually shown in front of a cave, fighting with woolly mammoths and cave bears, and with a spear, and dressed in skins. And this is the way he's interpreted by most of the evolutionary scientists. And then we have modern man. Cro-Magnon man, modern man, Homo sapien, different ways, archaic man. But this is a fully human man, according to the evolutionist. Now, let's look at Australopithecus, a little bit about him. Australopithecus, once again, southern ape. Australopithecus, southern ape from Africa, apparently evolved. This is a scientific opinions, not mine, apparently evolved in eastern Africa about 4 million years ago before spreading throughout the continent and eventually becoming extinct about 2 million years ago. So in Africa, he radiated, Australopithecus, radiated out from Africa, and he was there about 4 million years ago. He originated there, and he went extinct about 2 million years ago. And there's Australopithecus here, afarensis, is an ape from Afar. This is the Afar region. He genesis in Afar. They found him in Afar. And then there's Africanus, which is a southern ape from Africa. So there's two different subgroups of the Australopithecines. One found in the Afar region of Africa. The other one found in the all of the nation of Africa. And these are, once again, the evolutionary write-ups about them. Now you have Homo erectus. Homo erectus had a very thick skull, smaller cranium than you and I have, still within the human range, about 700 to 800 cubic centimeters for brain mass. Very, very pronounced brow ridges. Below the neck, it was identical to Homo sapiens. If you have the Homo erectus fossils from below the neck and human fossils from modern man below the neck, it's very difficult to tell them apart. So the main difference is the cranium. Pronounced brow ridges, robust bones, similar to Neanderthals but smaller framed. They've often been termed smaller Neanderthals. Let's look at the Neanderthals. I have a skull. These are not real. These are museum. These are the same ones you'll see in a museum. Cost lots of money. I have one of many of these at home, but this is Neanderthal man. There's a picture of his full cranium there with his mandible down here. And this is a Neanderthal man. They've been found throughout Europe and the Middle East. They were powerfully built people, very, very strong, extremely muscular, very big bones, very robust. They had an average of 20% more cranial capacity than modern humans. Let me put that in plain English. They had more brains than you and I have. We have about 1,400 to 1,200 cc's, cubic centimeters in brain mass. They had 1,600 plus. They're dated to the upper Pleistocene, which is about 40 to 70,000 years ago. This is the evolutionist dates, not mine. Let's look at Australopithecus and see something about him that helps us understand how to correctly interpret him. Once again, this is a crania of the Australopithecus. And here we have the crania of a pygmy chimp. And a pygmy chimp, they're also known as bonobos. They're alive and well in Afar right now. They live in Africa. And you can go to museums or zoos and see them. They're not extinct. Notice the brow ridges, the mandible down here. I mean, they're almost exactly the same. This one went extinct 2 million years ago, according to the evolutionists. This one is alive and well today. Let's look at the comparison of the Australopithecines and the pygmy chimps. Both of them have the same skeletal structure. One is alive and one is extinct. You know where I'm going with this. Both can walk upright. We talk about bipedalism and being bipedal. Being bipedal or walking on two legs is something great. Chickens are bipedal. Storks can walk on two legs. Flamingos walk on two legs. Dinosaurs walked on two legs. So it's no surprise that some of the apes and monkeys can also walk on two legs. Don't put more importance in that than you should. Both are of the same height. Both weigh about the same. Both live within 140 miles of each other. When the data is examined, it is obvious that the Australopithecines are a fossilized variation of the pygmy chimp. Here is, once again, Lucy. She's been given a human face, and we'll talk about that later on. She weighed about 64 pounds and was a little bit less than 4 feet tall. Here is a pygmy chimp. Notice the similarity. A pygmy chimp is about 74 pounds and a little bit more than 4 feet tall. Lucy's been given human feet right here. Notice the ape here's got the opposable thumb on the foot. Lucy doesn't have that. I'll tell you why in a minute she doesn't. And she also has more human-like arms. And I'll tell you why that in a minute. But this is Lucy, supposedly came into being about 4 million years ago, went extinct about 2 million. This is a pygmy chimp that is alive and well. The Australopithecines, which supposedly are more than 2 million years old, in my opinion, are alive and well in Africa today. They're just a variation of each other. If this one, Lucy was resurrected today and put in a zoo, she would be an ape placed in there with the chimpanzees. So that's how they've misinterpreted Lucy. I'm going to be showing you out of scientific articles because sometimes you will hear me say something, you'll say, boy, that's kind of far-fetched. Scientists don't really say those things. Well, I'm going to show you out of the literature. This is in Science News. It's an evolutionary publication. And I'm going to show you what it says in there. This is what it says about Lucy. I'm not going to read you the whole thing. But it says, Zilliman compares the pygmy chimpanzee to Lucy, one of the oldest fossil hominids known, and finds the similarity striking. So this is an evolutionist saying, we've compared Lucy to the pygmy chimps, which is what I'm doing right now, and they're almost identical in body size, in stature, and in brain size. She notes the major differences are the hip and the foot. We'll talk about that later. This represents younger Lucy's adaptation to bipedal walking. Remember I told you about bipedal? Officially called Australopithecus afarensis, has been dated to about 3.6 million years, although that date recently has been challenged. This is what is written in the scientific literature. Sussman also discovered that pygmy chimps have a unique style of locomotion. Like modern gorillas, they tend to be knuckle walkers on the ground, yet they seem to be natural bipeds, too frequently walking both upright on the ground and in the trees. So today we have an ape, pygmy chimps, that walk upright, just like Lucy was supposed to have been able to do 4 million years ago. So, in my opinion, Lucy and the pygmy chimpanzees are simply variations of each other. Lucy's alive and well today. Let's look at the correct fossil record as it pertains to Homo erectus. Here's the skull of Homo erectus. Homo erectus was the first upright walking man according to evolution. They occupied the time period from about 400,000 years to about 2 million years ago. Now, it's very interesting. We're going to look at a reconstruction of a Homo erectus fossil. And this reconstruction was done for an evolutionary museum by an evolutionist. These were not done by creationists. These were done by evolutionists. So let's see what they did. Here's a skull that they're basing this on, a Java man skull. Everyone's heard of Java man? Java man was a Homo erectus found in China. They've given him a bottom jaw. They put some flesh in. This is all done with clay. They've given him muscles, and there's what they think he looked like. To me, he looks pretty human. I know people that look like that. You put a suit on them, and they could sit right in here and wouldn't even turn a head. So this is Homo erectus that has been reconstructed. Here's one of the. Here's how one anthropologist fleshed out Java man using fossil Homo erectus fossil skull. The assigned date, once again, is 400,000 to 700,000 years. Notice the complete human quality of the face. This Homo erectus is perfectly human. And you don't have to believe me. Just look at the picture that an evolutionist has come up with. Homo erectus characteristics. This is what the Homo erectus people did. Homo erectus used fire. Now, we tend to think that fire is something that, you know, brutish people use. And, you know, they're sitting around in a cave with a fire going. Well, I remember once going to a church camp, a large church camp with hundreds of kids. And we were sitting around getting ready to start Bible study. This is many, many years ago. And there was a couple of kids, teenagers, trying to light a fire. And they had logs in there, and they had paper, and they had matches, and they had used a whole box of matches trying to light this fire. And my son Arnold was there, and my son Adam was there, and I taught them from about 4 years old on how to make fires. And they looked at me, and I looked at them, and I smiled at them, and they both got up, and within 5 minutes there was a fire going. The point is this: using and making fire is a skill. And you know, man is the only animal, if I can use that word, evolutionarily, that makes fire. So using fire is very important. Homo erectus had a permanent camp life. They found settlements where Homo erectus people lived. And they had a social structure. A Homo erectus made water crossings using boats or watercraft. There's some Homo erectus that they found built boats and got from one island to the other island. Animals don't do that. Only humans do that. And this is all in the fossil record, and this is all supported by evolutionist scientific articles, not creationist articles. Homo erectus used and made toothpicks, and they flossed their teeth. They found Homo erectus fossils, they found the mandible, and they found these grooves in their teeth. And they were trying to figure out, what exactly is all these grooves? There's some kind of magical thing that the Homo erectus did. Maybe it was some kind of a ritual or something. And they showed the Homo erectus mandibles to a dentist. He said, oh, I have people that floss their teeth too much, and they get those grooves in there. And what the Homo erectus people were doing is they were getting little pieces of grass, and they were putting in their teeth, and they were flossing their teeth. Animals do not floss their teeth. Homo erectus people did, and they left marks in their teeth. Homo erectus made high-quality javelins and was a master toolmaker. Here is some of the tools that they made. Now, I remember reading many, many years ago about this French professor. And this French professor was an anthropologist. And he dug up all kinds of tools and axes and arrowheads and spear points and flint knives. And he decided he wanted to make them. So he had this truck from the local quarry deposit about two to five tons of rocks in his backyard. And he would take these flint nodules and he practiced making these different points. It took him months to learn how to make them. This man had two college degrees. He was a doctor and had a master's degrees. And it took him months to figure out how to make one of these things here. So when you see and read about these people use stone tools, you have this concept, oh yeah, they were running around grunting, knocking rocks together. No, they made some very beautiful points and very beautiful spear points. And it took a lot of skill and foresight to make those. They found in the fossil record where the Homo erectus people would go to the water and dig up rocks and bring them and put them at their camp. Think about the mental gyrations that have to go into doing that. That wasn't an animal. That was a human being. And the fact that they made these shows this. So these are some of the characteristics of the Homo erectus people. Let's look at the Neanderthal fossils and correctly interpret him. Here's a Neanderthal fossil, a cranium. I have one right here. Neanderthal fossils have notoriously been misinterpreted. And I'm going to show you that in a minute. For many years, they were supposedly the missing link between modern man and fossil man. Charles Darwin wrote his Origin of Species, the Son of Man, back in 1864. And the early 1900s, people were going gaga over this information, and they had discovered some Neanderthal fossils, and they decided to try to make Neanderthal fossils fit between the apes and the humans. So in the last century, they misinterpreted Neanderthal man. The following information, and I'm going to show you this in these slides here, is going to show you how badly Neanderthal man was misinterpreted. Reconstruction of Neanderthal fossils. Here's various fossils, various ways he's been constructed or reconstructed. He's been given hair, lots of hair, an apish face, posed in front of a cave with a club in his hand. Our traditional view of Neanderthal man. Here's another one back. This was in about the 1920s. This is about the 1960s. He's got a little more humanity to him, but still not a guy you'd like to meet in a dark alley. Here is Neanderthal man in the 1980s. Here's Neanderthal man dressed up in a suit. They say that if you took Neanderthal man, put him in a suit, and put him in a subway, that he would go pass completely unnoticed. Except he'd be a little more muscular than most people. We were completely unnoticed. The funny thing about all of these representations is they're based on the same type of fossils. So this one, and this one, and this one, and this one were all based on the same kind of Neanderthal fossils. Which tells you what about the interpretation? It's open to whatever you think it should be. Here's how Neanderthal man has been portrayed by various evolutionary scientists. These are pictures in evolutionary articles, not in creationist articles, on the back of your Bible, based on the bias of the author. Let's compare the Neanderthal and the Homo sapiens skulls. Now here's a Homo Neanderthal skull. Here's a Homo sapiens skull. This skull is actually a little bit bigger than this, but I magnified them down so they'd fit together. I want you to notice something. There's an occipital bone at the rear of the skull right here. The Neanderthals have it. Modern humans do not have it. We're going to talk about these in a minute. Ocular tori. Ocular is your eye. Tori is bump. So there was a bump above the Neanderthals' eyelids or eye sockets. Here we have a Neanderthal skull. The brow ridge is right here. Here we have a human skull from Homo sapien. No brow ridges. Evolutionists will tell you, well, sure, the Neanderthals had big brow ridges. They're closer to the apes. And the apes had big brow ridges, therefore they had to have them. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. But they had very large ocular tori. Tori means bump. Ocular means eye. So they had big eye bumps. Sometimes we get intimidated with all this wordage. Larger brain or skull case. This skull right here, the case for the brain, is 20% larger than the human. We already alluded to that a while ago. Skull. The skull was flatter, squashed out wider, and longer than the Homo sapiens skull. Okay? So if you look at the Homo sapiens skull, it's flatter, wider, and pointed at the back. Those become very important when we consider some other things in a minute. Postcranial bones, rugged and very robust. In other words, postcranial means below the neck. Below the neck, the Neanderthals were extremely powerful. Very, very strong. Neanderthal skulls, evolution or environment. Let's look at some things. Here's a Homo neanderthalensis. Neanderthals were long-lived. Now, if the Neanderthal were the people of the Old Testament, especially the pre-flood people, or the people right after the flood, how long did Abraham live? 175 years. How long did Isaac live? I think 130 years. How long did Noah live? 950 years. This is a skull of a modern human. It's got sutures right here. When you pass through the birth canal, these sutures will allow your head to move and to be shaped so that you can pass through the tight birth canal. As people get older, 80, 90-year-old people, these sutures fuse together because they're not needed anymore. Neanderthals don't have those sutures. They're all fused together. They don't have them the way modern humans have them. Now, as humans get older, you get older people, and you compare them to younger people, their skull gets longer, their skull gets flatter, and their skull gets wider. And yes, women, it's true, as men get older, their skulls get thicker. So the bones actually thicken up. They get thicker. And this all happens when people get older. We're 60 or 70 years old and we're suffering from osteoporosis, a bone disease, bone loss. What would happen to you if you were a powerfully built person and you lived for 700 years in good health? What would happen to your skull? I'm saying that that's what would happen. Exactly what we're seeing in the fossil record. So the Neanderthals, who lived a long time, had brain and skull shape changes that are consistent with large amounts of time living on the earth. Okay? Some speculation there. Neanderthals had extremely powerful facial musculature. Very strong. Now let me give you an example. We take the mandible. I didn't bring it, but the mandible down here, the jaw. And we take the jaw of an Eskimo. Eskimos and some of the Indians used their teeth for clamps. They would hold a stick in their mouth and they would scrape it to make the arrows. They would put the skin in their mouth and hold it as they scraped off the top of the skin to process it. The fossil men's teeth are not decayed, they're worn. No sugar. So the teeth are very worn, and the face being very strong, when you would chew, what happens is your muscles in your face pull down. And what would happen is your eyelids, your eye orbits, the holes in your eyes, would start to close up. So the body would produce a bump there. Now, if you look at the jaws of the Eskimos, they had inside the jaw right here some bumps where the bones thickened up from the constant chewing. If there was an Eskimo child and he left the Eskimo way of life and he moved into the city, he wouldn't get those. But the grandfathers and the fathers who lived the old way would get those. What I'm saying is those bumps on the mandible were caused by environment. The bumps here on Neanderthal's skull, these ocular tori, are caused by constant chewing and having a very strong face and chewing for 300, 400, 500, 600 years instead of the 50, 60, or 70 that we chew. The greater muscularity and ruggedness was caused by better diet, genetics, and endocrine system differences. They were closer to Adam. We are not evolving, brethren, physically. We are devolving. The people in the past were very, very powerfully built. That's why the Bible says that there was men of renown. And these legends about Hercules and all these people doing all these exploits is actually based somewhat on fact. Let's look at the robustness of the Neanderthals. The evidence, now this is quotes from scientific literature, so you don't think that I'm over-dramatizing this. The evidence indicates that Neanderthals were people of incredible power and strength, far superior to all but the most avid bodybuilders of today. So you take Lou Ferrigno, Arnold Schwarzenegger, some of your wrestlers that are, you know, very powerfully built, give them 20% more brain mass. That would be Neanderthal man. They were extremely powerful. This is from an evolutionary article. Here's another one. This is from Geis, and I have my work cited at the end. Neanderthal was far more powerful than modern humans, whereas archaeologists can experimentally duplicate the wear patterns on tools such as were used by people from the upper Paleolithic. The wear patterns on Neanderthal tools cannot be duplicated. In other words, you take people that followed the Neanderthals, and you take the Neanderthals, and they made tools. And you would hold this axe, and if you use this axe to dig up roots or whatever, stone axe, you would put wear patterns on the face of the axe. we can't duplicate what the Neanderthals did because they were very, very strong. We can duplicate the wear patterns on people that came after them, but not people that were not the Neanderthals. We do not have the strength to do it. Neanderthal skeletons reflect a supremely powerful musculature. So all the fossil record indicates, and the scientific articles indicate, that Neanderthal people were people of incredible strength and power. Here's another one. I'm not going to read you the whole thing, but this is the article. This is out of Scientific American. They differ from modern man in having massive limb bones. This is Neanderthals. The skeletal robustness evidently reflects a Neanderthal's great muscular power. Everything indicates that for their height, both Neanderthal man and Neanderthal woman were bulkily built and heavily muscled. Many skeletal parts testify to this. Finger bones have bigger tuberosities. Tuberosities are endings, and the bigger the tuberosities, the more ligaments can be attached, and the stronger the grip. So they had very, very powerful grips. This kind of refined control, talking about the fingers, coupled with great power, also appears in a curious feature of the scapula or the shoulder blade. The shoulder blade that we have connects to our upper arm bone, and it's the shoulder blade, and there's a big sheet of muscles that connect that. There's a groove in the shoulder blade that is there when you're looking at very strongly muscled people. A lot of your bodybuilders have it. Most of your smaller men and women do not have it, because that's where the bone, that's where the muscle attaches that moves your arm up and down. Fighting, moving, up and down, throwing. All that is caused by this muscle I have back here attached to this scapular shoulder blade. All of the Neanderthal fossils have those grooves in them, which indicates that they were very, very strong. Here's another one. Manual dexterity in Neanderthals. You might think these guys were big and clumsy. Here's a picture of their digits. Here's what they're looking at. This thumb here and the finger right here. There's a thumb and there's a finger. This is copied out of this article right here. This is in Nature, one of the most prestigious evolutionary journals that there is. Lots of information here, but what? Notice what it says. Neanderthals were presumed to have limited manual dexterity on the basis of the anatomy of their thumb and forefingers. Big bones, they had to be clumsy. Here we investigate the likely extent of Neanderthal's thumb function by using a three-dimensional dynamic simulation that is based on the anatomical details and articular morphology of the thumb and index finger. Big scientific words, but we ran a test to see if this was true. We find that these digits could make tip-to-tip contact and conclude that manual dexterity in Neanderthals was probably not significantly different from that of modern humans. In fact, given the open configuration of the Neanderthal trapezoidal metacarpal one joint, this spot right here, that area, how big it is, given the fact that we have that, all Neanderthal thumbs were probably more mobile than that of modern humans. So although the Neanderthals were powerfully built, they were very strong and had a lot of manual dexterity. That's just investigating the hands. You'll see the same for the rest of the body if you look at the various articles that are in the scientific literature. Neanderthal characteristics, properly interpreted, they used fire. They played musical instruments. You know, we have this idea that Neanderthals were cavemen grunting on the front of a cave. Here is one of the flutes that they discovered in a Neanderthal cave. It's made out of the femur of some kind of bone. There's a hole there. There's another hole there. There's another hole there. It's broken off over here. And there's another hole right here, and this is broken off. These holes are spaced to give the right pitch. So not only were they musically inclined, but they knew about pitch. And I remember going online, and they had a link to this. You can go online, and they have a flautist, some person that's a flautist in some orchestra. And the American Academy of Sciences invited him to come use the flute that they had made a copy of, this flute right here. And he played music on it, very nice sounding flute music. It's very interesting the way it sounds. So the Neanderthals played musical instruments. They hunted in groups. You go this way, you go that way, we'll go up the middle. Strategy. buried their dead. When you bury your dead, that implies that you have some kind of concept of the afterlife. You might even have some kind of religious concept. Many of the Neanderthals were buried with spears and things to be used in the next life, as if the Neanderthals believed that there was going to be a time when they were going to come back to life again. We call that in the church what? The resurrection. They made beautiful and functional tools and weapons, were massively built, stronger, faster, and were quicker than modern humans. They say, and this is out of the fossil record, you put a modern man in the ring, you put a Neanderthal man in the ring, the Neanderthal man is the one that's going to come out. Had 20% more brain mass than modern humans, was often found buried with modern man. So sometimes Neanderthal fossils are found buried with modern man. And we'll get into why that is later on in a minute. It's very interesting why that happens. They used and manufactured personal ornaments. They made beads and necklaces that they wore around their neck. So when we look at the properly interpreted Neanderthal fossil record, we find out that Neanderthal man was simply a variation of modern man. So what I'm trying to show you is that Neanderthal man and Homo erectus, remember the picture before, are simply variations of human beings that lived in a different time, in a different environment. Some of them living maybe for hundreds of years. Our next Bible study is on the longevity of man. And we'll get into some of those things. But what would happen to a human being that lived to be 400, 500, 600 years old? Fossil record of early man is important because it shows us that pre-Adamic fossil men are simply extinct apes. Now, back in the 60s and 70s, there were scholars in the Church of God who believed in such things as pre-Adamic men. And they said there were pre-Adamic men, and these men were kind of prototypes that God had created to kind of test the, you know, the creation of humans, and they were alive but didn't have the spirit of man. That's a common belief in some of the older people in the churches. What I have come to understand is that if you understand that the men that were being talked about as being pre-Adamic were simply extinct apes, there is no pre-Adamic man. Now, the church scholars believed the evolutionists when they said these people could do this and this. And in reality, they were talking about extinct apes. So there are no pre-Adamic men, in my opinion. Early man lived a long time. How do we know that? By the skull shapes that took place here. Early man lived a violent life. We're going to show that in a minute. Early man was buried in caves. Homo erectus, Neanderthal, and modern man often overlapped in time and location. If Homo erectus was supposed to give rise to modern man, then Homo erectus has to exist before modern man. If modern man existed in the evolutionary record before Homo erectus, then Homo erectus did not descend from modern man. And so what I have found in the literature is that Homo erectus, Neanderthal, and modern man overlapped in time and in location. Sometimes the Australopithecines, the Homo erectus, the Neanderthals, and modern humans were all alive at the same time. How can that be if one led to the other? Burial practices of the patriarchs. Let's look at the burial practices of the people in the Bible. Let's look at the burial practices of the people in the Bible. Let's go to Genesis chapter 19. Open your Bibles, and we're going to go to Genesis 19. I told you that I was going to show you how the fossil record supports the books of Genesis and is in agreement with it. Genesis chapter 19. You remember the story of Lot? Lot is run out of Sodom and Gomorrah by the angels. Go live in Zorah. And he says, no. You know, his wife turns and looks back, pillar of salt. And he says, no, I don't want to go live there. Let me go live somewhere else. Notice verse 30. Then Lot went up out of Zorah and dwelt in the mountains, and his two daughters were with him, for he was afraid to dwell in Zorah, and he and his two daughters dwelt in a cave. Here is a person of God, very cultured, living in a cave. We tend to think, because of evolution, that only half-wits, trolls, and fossil men live in caves. And actually, caves are very, very often used as places to live. Genesis chapter 23. Forward a couple of pages. Genesis 23. Verse 17. So the field of Ephron, which was in Machpelah, which was before Meramah, the field and the cave which was in it, and all the trees that were in the field, which were within the surrounding borders, were deeded to Abraham as a possession in the presence of the sons of Heth, before all who went at the gate of his city. And after this, Abraham buried Sarah his wife in the cave of the field at Machpelah. So Abraham buried his wife where? In the cave. How long did Sarah live? Probably about 129 years. Double the normal lifespan. Genesis chapter 49. You remember Joseph going to Egypt? And when he's in Egypt, he reveals himself to his brothers. And then he tells his brothers, come live with me in Egypt. And they bring Jacob, who thought Joseph was dead, and they bring Jacob to Egypt, and Jacob lives there, and then Jacob dies. And he tells them before he dies, what does he tell them? You bury me with Abraham. Notice Genesis chapter 49, verse 29 and 32. I'm getting ahead of myself. This is 29 and 32. Then they charged him, yeah, Jacob's death. They charged them and said to them, I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah. Verse 31, there in the cave they buried Abraham and Sarah his wife. They buried Isaac, Rebekah his wife, and there they buried Leah. So all of these patriarchs were buried in caves. Let's go to John chapter 11. You remember the story about Lazarus dying? Jesus taking his time. Lazarus dies, and Martha and Mary said, you know, if you'd have been here, he wouldn't have died. He wouldn't have died if you'd have been here. And Jesus resurrects Lazarus. John 11. But notice John 11, verse 34. And he said, where have you laid him? And they said, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. And the Jews said, see how he loved him? And some of them said, could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind also have kept this man from dying? Then Jesus, verse 38, again groaning in himself, came to the tomb. It was a cave. Where was Lazarus buried? In a cave. He was buried in a cave. Hebrews 11. And we're going to read, in Hebrews 11, you read about, you know, Abraham, about Noah, and about all the patriarchs, the men of faith. Notice Hebrews 11, verse 37. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, they were tempted, were slain with a sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented people of God. And all these having obtained, I'm sorry, verse 38, of whom the world was not worthy, they wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth. Caves were very important places for people to live and to be buried in back in the Old Testament. 1 Kings chapter 18. 1 Kings chapter 18. Verse 4. Ahab and Jezebel are trying to kill the prophets. Verse 4, for so it was while Jezebel massacred the prophets of the Lord that Obadiah had taken 100 prophets and hidden them 50 to a cave and had fed them bread and water. So the prophets were hidden in a cave. You remember the story about Elijah in a cave? We're not going to go there. But Elijah spent some time in a cave. So here's what I'm saying. The patriarchs were buried in caves. This included probably the patriarchs before the flood. They were buried in caves. Did those patriarchs live a long time? Yeah, hundreds of years. Abraham lived 175 years. Sarah lived 125 years. Isaac lived like 130 years. I mean, these people lived for a long time. They didn't live, you know, 50, 30, or 40 years old and then die. Let's look at the burial practices of the Neanderthals, which the fossil record indicates were people that lived a long time. Everybody see where I'm going with this? The Neanderthal fossil evidence shows that the Neanderthal practices is in complete accord with the Genesis record. They have discovered about 350 plus Neanderthal fossils in 80 sites. 186 of them, 53%, are burials. So half of the Neanderthal fossils they find have been buried. That means they put them in a cave, dug a hole, and covered them over with dirt. These were not, you know, found scattered out in the field somewhere. All of them burials in caves or rock shelters. Further, it is obvious that caves were used as family burial grounds. You remember Abraham, Isaac, as burial grounds or cemeteries, as the following sites show. Here are some examples out of the evolutionary literature. This is not out of Bible literature or out of creationist literature. This is out of evolutionary literature. In the Caprania rock shelter in Croatia, there were 75 Neanderthals buried. Now, if you have 75 Neanderthals buried, that means that was a cemetery. I mean, people went there and they took their relatives, their aunts. Whenever somebody died in that family clan, they were buried in that cave, much like Abraham. Notice how many of these are in the Middle East. Cure Caves in France, 26. Mount Carmel, Israel, Kebra Cave, 21. These are all Neanderthals. Tubal Cave in Mount Carmel, Israel, 12 Neanderthals were buried. La Frachia Rock Shelter in France, 8 Neanderthals. Shandar Cave in Iraq, which we're going to look at in a minute, 7 Neanderthals buried. Maud Cave in Galilee, Israel, 7 Neanderthals buried. Gutter Cave in Mount Sisera, Italy, 4 Neanderthals buried. Tashar Ali Rock Shelter in Lebanon, 3 Neanderthals buried. So here's what's happening, brethren. A little speculation here. The Neanderthals lived a long time. Their skull shape would change, and there's more to it than that, but just let me give you the main details. And they would be buried in caves in the Middle East. Along comes man, evolutionary man, scientist, and they dig up these individuals. And these individuals who are the patriarchs of the Bible, they're saying were the Neanderthals that prove evolution occurs. How deceptive and seductive is Satan? Think about the implications of that. So what I'm saying is that the way the Neanderthals were buried in caves fits exactly the pattern that's going on in Genesis. Let's look at the Shandar Cave in Iraq, some of the implications of that. Here's a picture of the Shandar Cave. Here's a cave where, remember we talked about the Shandar, there were 7 individuals buried in it? This is in Iraq, and here's a cave. And they went in there, and they dug out the Neanderthals. Now, burial is a religious act, is it not? Animals do not bury their dead. Modern humans and Neanderthal remains have been found together at the same burial site. Think about it. Now, let me give you something else to think about real quickly. Most of the Neanderthals suffered from rickets, which is a softening of the bones, which means they didn't get enough vitamin D. Some of you that are older, you remember when you were a kid and your mother would give you cod liver oil? She gave you cod liver oil because cod liver oil had a lot of vitamin D in it, and it kept your bones nice and straight and strong. If you didn't get enough vitamin D, your bones got soft and you got rickets. A lot of kids in the 30s and the 40s were bow-legged. And that was caused by not getting enough vitamin D. They started putting vitamin D in milk and in bread. Rickets no longer occur, except in some third world countries. So the bones would get soft. So if you had soft bones because of rickets and you lived a long time, it was easier for the skull to get remodeled. Everybody with me? So there was other factors besides that. Most of the Neanderthal skulls have been found away from the water and up in the mountains, which means they didn't have much of a chance to eat fish. And what does fish have in it? Fish oil has vitamin D. If you're living in a cave and it's cold because the ice ages have come, you're going to be covered up and not get out very much. Once again, not enough vitamin D. Now, here's an interesting thing. Many modern people live in caves. You see this cave here where they dug out the Shandar and the Neanderthals? What the scientists don't tell you, or they'll tell you, but you have to kind of read in between the lines, is inside the cave, before they dug out the Neanderthals, there was a family of people living in the cave. And they had an antenna right up here where they could receive the television signals because they had TV in there and they had toasters in there. So how prejudiced is it to say that people that lived in caves were backwards and only ancient people lived in caves when the cave they're digging the Neanderthals out of was being lived in by modern people? So that's another little fact that you might be interested in. More than 50% of the Neanderthal fossils have been found buried, not in caves, not just in caves, but buried in caves. Just like Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and all of the patriarchs in the Bible. I tell you that Neanderthal man was very violent, and the pre-flood world was very violent. Does the fossil record of Neanderthal man show that they lived violent lives? Genesis 6 through 5, let's go there. Let's look at why God destroyed the earth. Genesis 6. And this is the introduction to the destruction of the world by the flood. Genesis 6, chapter verse 5. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only on evil continually. So God said, the world is very, very wicked. Notice verse 11. The earth also was corrupt before the God, and the earth was filled with violence. So it was corrupt and filled with violence. Verse 13. And God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence, and I will destroy them with the earth. So God destroyed the earth because men in it were violent and they were corrupt. Let's go to Genesis chapter 6, the first couple of verses, same chapter. Now it came to pass, when men began to multiply in the face of the earth, and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose. The sons of God were the line of Cain, the daughters of men were the line of Seth. The line of Seth was a righteous line, the line of Cain was a pagan line, and we had pagans intermarrying with the line of Seth, which was a righteous line. It was not interracial marriage, it was interreligious marriage. And so this was destroying the truth. Verse 3, and the Lord said, my spirit shall not always strive with man forever. So there was strife between man and God. God didn't like the way man had turned out. We're going to look at the violence in the fossil record. This is the title here, Trauma Among the Shandar Neanderthals. You remember I told you that the Shandars, there were seven Neanderthals in the Shandar cave? We're going to look at some of them. Four of the adult Neanderthals from Shandar, Iraq, Shandar 1, 3, 4, and 5, they numbered them, show evidence of anti-mortem trauma. Anti means before, mortem means death. So before they died, they were traumatized. Something happened to them. There was skulls or something were traumatized. Now let me just mention something to you as a little side note here. The trauma in the fossil record is all skeletal, which means bones are broken, heads are smashed in, teeth are knocked out, things like that. Can someone cut off your ear? Yeah, that's still trauma, but it's not going to show up in the fossil record. So the trauma that I'm going to show you is actually worse than it probably was, because we're only dealing with the fossils and the bones. What would happen if somebody disemboweled you with a knife? It wouldn't show up in the fossil record, although you died a violent death. So just bear that in mind. This is out of Scientific Journal articles. Shandar 1 sustained injuries to the right frontal squama, top of the head. The left lateral orbit, one of the eyeballs, probably blind. The right humerus, the hand, the armpit right here, arm right here. Fifth metatarsal, one of the bones on the finger. There's atrophy of the right clavicle, so his
collarbone.
Collarbone. The clavicle was broken, and because the clavicle was broken, he couldn't move his arm. So the arm atrophied because he couldn't use it. So it withered up, and they finally had to amputate it. Degenerative joint disease of the right knee, ankle, and these tarsal or metatarsal joints are the foot. And remodeling of the left tibia. You remember the basketball player that broke his ankle a few days ago? He broke his tibia. That was the foot at the bottom. This one person had all those injuries to him. Shandar 3 experienced trauma-related degenerative joint disease of the right talocural and talocalcineal joints. Those were the foot joints. And sustained a penetration wound across the left ninth rib. Neanderthal ribs were very massive. They were almost twice as thick as yours and mine. Can you imagine how much force it took to get a knife to penetrate and almost cut that rib in half? There was two ribs, the ninth and the eighth one. They both had knocks in them where a knife had gone in there, been pulled out, and the rib had healed. But you can imagine the force it took to notch one of the Neanderthal's ribs. So somebody took a knife to him. Shandar IV suffered a fracture of the right 7th or 8th rib. So he had broken ribs that healed up. Shandar V had a scalp wound over the left frontal. Somebody took a part of his head off. A high frequency of anti-mortem trauma associated with the survival of the injured individuals appears to have been characteristic of the Neanderthals. What this is saying in fancy language is most of your Neanderthal fossils showed that there was a lot of trauma in their life. They were beaten up or broken bones. Here's another one. The dawn of humans, Neanderthals, National Geographic. Notice what it says. So many Neanderthal bones show traumatic breaks that one of Trinkus's, this is an anthropologist, graduate student Tommy Berger decided to investigate the pattern. He analyzed the bones of 17 Neanderthals who had suffered a total of 27 traumatic injuries. I noticed that they were mostly injuries to the head and upper body, almost no lower limb injuries. So most of your injuries were up to the top. This person made a chart. Here it is. He compared the injuries to rodeo riders who ride bronx and bulls. The Neanderthals are here. Here's the rodeo riders right here. 10% of your rodeo riders suffer injuries to the foot. Neanderthals, about 12. The arm, about 25% of the Neanderthals had arm injuries. Bronc riders, about 22%. The head, about 40% of the rodeo riders, and about 30%. So they said that if you compared the injuries, it was very similar to what people who are rodeo riders would receive. So they led very, very violent lives, brethren. The violence of early man, we're going to look at cannibalism. Cannibalism. You think God destroyed the pre-flood world because they were being impolite? No, the Bible says that the world was corrupt. This is a French-American team digging at a Neanderthal site. Evidence of cannibalism. They were expert hunters. Butchered carcasses, deers, goats, woolly rhinoceros, using stone implements. And let me tell you about stone implements, brethren. We tend to think that knives are very sharp when they're stainless steel. The rabbis who do circumcisions, the old rabbis who do circumcisions, use a flint knife. They know how to nap the flint to make the cutting edge on it. Cut flint is extremely sharp. And so they use these flint knives to dismember, deflesh their kills. After their kills were butchered, they used stone hammers and anvils to break open the long appendage bones to get marrow. So they take the long bones, put them on top of a big rock, get another rock, break it open, and suck out the marrow. Are we supposed to eat blood? Many of the skulls were brashed open to remove the brains. The bones were then thrown into a skeletal trash heap. Evidence now shows that they did the same to their fellow Neanderthals. So they did that to the animals, and they did that to each other. Here it is in fancier language. This is in science. Anatomical assessment of the hominid bone modifications leads to an understanding of the butchery practices used. We can look at the bones, and we know how they butchered up people. For example, all three Neanderthals represented the clavicle had cut marks on the interior surface indicating that they chopped the shoulder off. That's what I'm saying in fancy language. At least one individual each, the Achilles tendon, the pedial flexor tendons, these are the calf muscles, and the tendons of the brachialis were cut traversely at the ankle, so they took off the calf muscle. Elbow joints were taken off. The temporalis muscle was removed from two of the immature cranial vaults. Cut marks on the lingual, the tongue, cut marks on the lingual surface of the juvenile mandible shows that the tongue was cut out. Cut marks on the female femoral shaft show that the thigh musculature was removed. These bone modifications indicate that the human individuals were defleshed and disarticulated. After this, the bones were broken open to get at the marrow. This is what they did to each other, brethren. Some of the Neanderthals. Now, not all Neanderthals were this way, but some were. And they find it often when they're looking at Neanderthal fossils. We were answering the question, does the fossil record show that men were violent? Fossil evidence of Neanderthal cannibalism. Here's a skull. Stone, flint, knife, cut marks in the back of the skull, right here. You can see the cut marks there. That indicates that the scalp was cut off and then a hole was cut here to extract the brains. Here's some more cut marks right here, made with flint knives. And a fragment of the temporalis bone, portion of the skull showing where razor-sharp flint knives were used to fillet out the chewing muscles of the lower jaw. This bone fragment is from one of the juvenile Neanderthal skulls. The deer crania had similar butchery marks. So Neanderthal man was very violent. Some of the fossils we find show that. The longevity of early man. Longevity of early man. Genesis 5. Let's look at Genesis 5. If you're in Genesis 6, all you got to do is move over to the next page. Verse 5, all the days of Adam were 930 years. Verse 14, all the days of Canaan were 910 years. And it talks about these people that were living before the flood. They lived almost a millennium, 900 plus years. Noah lived 950 years. Methuselah, 969 years. Adam, 936 years. So before the flood, people were living for a long time. Genesis 11. What about after the flood? Genesis 11. We read in verse 10. And it talks about living a couple of hundred years after the flood. So after the flood, the lifespan declines. But we still have people living 200, 300, 400 years. Until it comes down to about the time of Abraham and David, where people are living 100 years and then 70 years. So people in the past, if the Bible record is correct, which it is, people in the past lived for hundreds of years. Once again, what would happen to a skull of a person that lived to be 600, 700, 800, 900 years old? Now, you remember I told you that the Neanderthal fossils were often found mixed together with the human fossils? Let's say you have twin sons. One son dies at 55 years old. He's buried in the cave, your family cave. The brother lives to be 700 years old. His skull changes like this one. He's buried in the same cave. Neanderthals and human beings being buried in the same cave. They don't understand that the Neanderthal people were simply a variation of man that had different skull shapes because of environments. And if the two brothers lived in different environments, they would have different skull shapes. If they one lived longer than the other, they would have different skull shapes. If one lived by the water and ate more fish, they would have different skull shapes. What would happen to you if you had syphilis? Syphilis remodels your bones and it changes the bones. And a pathologist can look at bones and say, this person suffered from syphilis because for the last 30 years, syphilis has been remodifying his bones. What would happen to you if you lived with syphilis for 700 years? That's why we have some of these fossil men that are very brutish looking. It wasn't evolution, it was environment. So longevity is very, very important when you look at the fossil records. So the skulls indicate that the humans living at this time lived for a very long time, and the biblical record indicates the same thing. Anomalous fossils of early man. There are hundreds of examples of out-of-order fossils. Let me give you an example. You find a Declaration of Independence in your garage. It looks really old. It looks authentic. You take this to the National Archives and say, can you examine this? Because if it's really a copy or an original of the Declaration of Independence, they made several copies. This is worth millions. So the person says, oh yeah, it's authentic except for the ink. The ink is from 1930s. It's actually the same ink that was used on Bic pens. What would you say? It's a fraud. It's no good. What happens when fossils are rude? You know what I mean by rude? They show up late or at the wrong time. There's lots of examples of rude fossils and fossils that are not in the proper order. These fossils falsify the theory of evolution, just like the big ink on the Declaration of Independence falsified that this was written back in 1776. Didn't take a genius to see that. Scientists overlook these fossils. Are they argue their way around them? And I'll show you that in a minute, because of philosophical bias. If evolution is not true, then that means the creationists are correct. And we're not going to accept that. There's a grandmother principle, which we're also going to look at. There's a young lady that walks in here. She's about 25 years old. And you say, oh, who's that young lady? And I go, oh, that's my grandmother. What? Come on over here. And she introduces herself and says, oh, yes, I'm Mr. Mendez's grandma. How old are you? 25. She cannot be my grandmother. She has to be older than me because she has to give rise to me. So if we have Homo erectus fossils that are too late, they're going to falsify the theory of evolution because they need to appear before that time period. It doesn't matter what timing system or what chronology you use or what dating system you use. If you just look at the way they appear in the fossil record, they violate the grandmother principle. And we're going to look at that in a minute. We're going to look at two of these. Here's one of them. The KP-271 fossil humerus. This is the bottom of this arm, left arm. Bottom of this arm right here. It's this part right here. Here's the picture of the ribs. Here's a picture of the arm bone. There's a lower arm bone. There's this part right here. This is the fossil, picture of the fossil itself. KP-271, known as the Canopy hominid 1, is the bottom end of the left upper arm bone. It has been dated to 4.5 million years by several different methods. It has been computer compared to the humeri of various fossil men, a chimpanzee, and a man. The results show that the Canopy specimen, which is 4 to 4.5 million years old, is indistinguishable from modern Homo sapiens. Wait a minute. We got a lower arm bone of a modern person in the fossil record of 4.5 million years. Yes, we do. That's one of those fossils that's out of order. According to human evolution, modern man is only a few hundred thousand years old. So what do they do with this? I'll show you in a minute what they do with it. Here's another one. The Laetoli footprints. These are footprints found in dried lava beds. There was some lava, supposedly millions of years ago, and somebody walked in this and left these footprints, and then it got covered over by more lava, and it hardened and it fossilized. In the literature, in the evolutionary literature, they say that they look completely human. As a matter of fact, one of the young boys, who is the son of one of the men that found it, looked at it and said, Dad, they look like footprints right out of the beach. They're completely human looking. There's only one problem with them. They're 3.5 to 4.5 million years old. So here we have modern human footprints at 4.5 million years old. Remember the grandmother principle? How can Homo erectus lead to modern man if Homo erectus existed after 4.5 million years? But evolutionists state that they could not have been made by modern man since they are so old. What do? They therefore have assigned them to the Australopithecus. Extinct ape are given human qualities. Here we have Lucy. You notice her feet down here? Her feet, she wasn't found with any feet bone. There was no bones of her toes or her feet. How did they know that this is what the feet look like? Well, obviously, the Laetoli footprints were made by her. So we have to assign her human footprints. Notice the modern human-looking arm right up here? The Canopy 271 fossil was used to interpret what her arm looked like. So what they've done is they've taken an ape and they've given him human qualities by using misinterpreted fossils. Instead of saying, wow, look at that. Somebody walked here. Not only did they walk there, brethren, but they walked there. There was two sets of prints. And there was little prints of a smaller child, and the little child walked on inside of the bigger prints, like your little kid, our grandson, would do. He was jumping from one to the other. So you have two humans, one larger, one smaller, and some smaller footprints inside the bigger ones. What do you got? You got a couple walking with their kid some time ago. Face is misinterpreted. The nose is cartilage. The ears are cartilage. The hair does not fossilize. They didn't find her with this face. They gave her that face. Because lips and noses and ears and hair do not fossilize. So they're guessing. Now notice the nose. They gave her a human nose that kind of sticks out. Most of your apes have a nose that's kind of inside like this. They gave her a human nose. They didn't know that. They just guessed it. So if they had given her an apish nose, she would look like an ape instead of like a human. And that's what I'm saying. The face is misrepresented from hair, ears, nose, soft tissue, which does not fossilize. Human arm, misrepresented from the KP-271. Human footprints were used to tie in the foot at the bottom of this. All based on supposition. Now, I told you that fossil men overlap in the fossil record. Here we have 5 million years ago to present day. If you look at the scientific literature, not the creationist literature, not the literature that's on our website, if you look at the scientific evolutionary literature, and you look at their published dates for men, this is what you find. Afarensis, Australopithecus afarensis, about 5 million years ago to about 2.5. Australopithecus africanus, from about 5 million years ago to about 75,000 years ago. Homo erectus, from about, look at how Homo erectus precedes all of this. These guys here are supposed to give rise to Homo erectus. He is right. So we had Homo erectus and the Australopithecus existing at the same time. Here's Homo sapien. Homo sapiens, remember 4.5 million years ago? Here's the feet. They almost precede the afarensis. So here we have a fossil chart based on the published dates of the fossils that shows that evolution could not have occurred. You often see these in the back of books, but they leave out the ones that don't match their kind of thinking. When you put them all in there, this is what you get, not their picture. Fossil record of early man indicates the following. There has been no human evolution. Man has devolved. The major fossil groups of man overlap. They often live together at the same time, sometimes in the same place. Fossil men buried their dead in caves, much like the Genesis account indicates. Fossil men led very violent lives, which agrees with Genesis. Fossil men had skull-shaped changes that were consistent with living a long time, as was mentioned in the book of Genesis. The fossil record of early man indicates the following. The properly interpreted record of early man agrees with the book of Genesis and the biblical record. We don't have it down exactly, but it does agree in all the major points. You have to remember that scientists are extremely biased. We have early man here, and early man agrees with the Genesis account that's in the Bible. Here's my photo credits and copyright notices. Here's my works cited, where I get all this information from. Does anybody have any questions, comments? Very good. Mr. Hernandez, you can come up here, and we'll close with one more hymn and a prayer, please.